Thanks for listening to the Bellevue Christian Church podcast. We're a church in Bellevue, Pennsylvania, where ordinary people are learning to live everyday life like Jesus. We believe that one way to learn that life is by engaging with an ancient but active collection of books called the Bible every single week. Hey, my name is Austin Gunn. I'm the lead pastor here at Bellevue Christian Church. As Isaac just said, we're starting a new three-week series, kind of getting us up into the fall through Labor Day, called Chapters. And this is all about what it's like and what it looks like to follow Jesus through the different chapters of your adult life, young, middle, and late adulthood. Some of you are about to find out you're in middle adulthood, and it's about to freak you out. But, you know, we're going to talk about these different chapters. And I want you to imagine that this is a book about your life. You know, you're at the end of your life. Artificial intelligence has advanced pretty well. It's found all of your data online and it's pulled together a book about your life. And in that book, it's divided into parts or chapters. There might be lots of sub-chapters under each of these chapters, and lots of little headings, but there's three major chapters of your adult life. And so excluding adolescence and childhood, which is also important, there are three major chapters of your adult life. Here's a little diagram to walk us through it. But we're going to talk about these chapters over the next 3 weeks. And so the first chapter is chapter one, young adulthood. And who are my young adults in the room who are between 18 and 34? Raise your hand, raise it high so we can see. Let's give a round of applause for young adults in the room, everybody. It's not raising a hand yet. I'm 34, so did I pick 34 because of that? I don't know, but I'm like right at the end. I just turned 34 like last week, so I'm kind of on the liminal space, as we'll talk about between these two chapters. Chapter two is middle adulthood, and we're calling that ages 35 to 59. If you're willing, will you guys raise your hand? Let us know who the middle adulthood peeps are. Yeah, let's give them a round of applause. We got plenty of them. Who are here with us today, and I'm just about to head into that, so next year if I were doing this series, I'd be right there with you, but I'm still a young adult. Chapter three of this book about your life is late adulthood. I wasn't sure what word to give to that, but late adulthood is what we landed on. It's the 60 plus. Who's willing to admit it? They're in the 60 plus crowd. Yeah, let's give some round of applause. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. One of the things, man, I love about this church, it's not what the series is about, is we have people at all different chapters of their lives. You know, so many churches are divided by chapters. It's just like you have this chapter goes over here, this chapter goes over here. Love this church. Looks like our neighborhood. Looks like people in every chapter of their lives. But here's why this matters, and here's why we're doing this series, is that each chapter of your life changes how you follow Jesus. Each chapter of your life changes how you follow Jesus. Each chapter is going to mean different questions that you're asking that are just burning in your heart. It's going to be different kinds of angst that you're feeling and tensions. You're going to have different challenges that you're facing and obstacles. You're going to have different kind of decisions that you face in these different seasons of your life. You're going to bring different gifts to the life of the church in different seasons and chapters of your life. You're going to have different experiences, different opportunities, different temptations, and all of these things are going to impact and influence the way in which you follow Jesus. Or maybe you're somebody who's like, look, I'm not following yet. I'm still exploring what all this is about. There's plenty of you in the room today. And that's okay too, that even your chapter that you're in, the way that you approach and explore who Jesus is going to look a little bit different. So this is for you too. And each person's story is unique. Like at the end of your life, you're going to have unique features about your story. God has designed and wired each of you differently. You each have a unique story. But what you're going to find is that across people's lives, people who are in the same chapter tend to experience some similar themes. And that's part of what we want to draw out in this series. And the reason we're doing this is because nobody tells you this. And suddenly one day you wake up and you find that nothing feels the same anymore. What worked 10 years ago for following Jesus doesn't seem to be working in the same way. The questions you were asking yesterday no longer feel like the questions you're asking today. You wake up one day and you're suddenly in a different chapter and nobody has prepared you for it. And if you're just about to start the chapter of middle adulthood, usually the trigger is you wake up and you're sore just from sleeping. And you're like, man, okay, I think I'm in a new stage today. And so what we're going to do in this series, we're going to guide you through these different chapters. I'm going to be walking us through the young and middle adulthood as somebody who's living in the middle space between those right now. And on the final week, my dad's going to come in and talk about everything he's learned about late adulthood so far and provide some guidance there. And by the end of this series, what I want you to do is be able to name the chapter that you're in right now. and be able to have some practical guidance and takeaways for what it can look like to follow Jesus or explore who he is in this chapter. And some of you, like me, you're in this kind of transitional liminal space between these two chapters. Like, you're maybe right at the end of young adulthood. You don't feel like that anymore, but you also don't feel like middle adulthood fits who you are. You're right at the end of middle adulthood, but late adulthood doesn't feel like who you are yet. And so you're in these liminal spaces. If that's you, man, this is the series for you, because it's going to help you kind of make sense of where you've been, but then figure out where you're going next and ask the right questions. And you might be thinking, right, you know, maybe I can check out for the other two messages in this series, right? Most people only attend church about once a month anyways. Like, this will be my time, you know. But what I would recommend is that you try to get through all of these over the next 3 weeks, as many as you can, because one, if you've already been through the chapter that we're going to talk about, which many of you have in this room, have been through today's chapter that we're talking about, it's going to help you make sense of your own story. You're going to think back. I hope it brings you back to that chapter and says, oh, that's what was going on. That's what I was feeling. But it's also going to help you relate to people who are still in that chapter, because we are a church that strives to be intergenerational, which also means just across these different chapters. And so some of the tensions in church sometimes are forgetting about what chapter somebody else is in and what you're feeling in that chapter. And so we want to be able to help make sense of each other. But the other thing is, if you have yet to go through a chapter that we're going to talk about, like young adults in this room, you're going to hear today and be like, all right, I think I got what I need. But knowing what's coming is going to help you. Knowing what's coming is going to help you begin to think about and preparing for what's ahead. And so that's what we're going to be talking about in this series, is chapters of our lives. And today, we're going to start with chapter one, which is all about young adulthood, ages 18 through 34. And some of you are in it. Others of you have been there. Some of the youngest in the room who are maybe in high school, this is coming for you. Like, you're still in adolescence, but you're beginning to be in that liminal space where you're beginning to think about young adulthood. And I wish somebody had talked to me about this when I was that age. And so I want to, maybe they did, but I don't pay attention, you know. And so nonetheless, pay attention today, because it's for you. It's going to help you make sense of it when you get there. And so what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about the five searches that every young adult is on. Like, these five searches I've seen again and again in young adulthood. And we're going to talk about the one thing that every young adult needs most in this chapter, which is where anybody else from a different chapter, that's going to impact you today. And then we're going to talk about three very practical next steps you can take as you're following Jesus through this chapter. And here's our grounding text for today. If you have a Bible, you can open up to 1 Timothy 4:12 through about 5:2. We're going to be all kind of over the Bible in the middle of this sermon. And you can just put a finger there, just, you know, fold a page or whatever, or I don't know, whatever. But find a way to mark it. We're going to get to it. It's going to take us a minute to get to that text. There's a lot of setup for this, but we're going to get to that text in just a little bit. Just a little background on me, though, and why I moved back to the city of Pittsburgh. So at 18 years old, or 19, I left the city of Pittsburgh to go to a college in the middle of a cornfield to get an intercultural studies degree, which I thought was my ticket to go anywhere else in the world. In the end, it led me right back to my hometown of Bellevue, and I moved back here at 22 years old as a young adult. And the reason that I moved back here at 22 years old, as a young adult, me and Julie just got married. We moved into a third-floor apartment, which is $490 for rent. It didn't have laundry, and it had our sink backed up into our shower. It was a very gross experience, but $490, couldn't beat that. So we were there for about 5 years. But in that time, we moved back, and the reason we moved back is because we felt led and called to start a young adults ministry at this church. And so that was 2012, or 22 years old, or 23 years old, and starting this young adults ministry at this church. And so I'm in the middle of young adulthood, or right at the beginning, and we're starting a ministry to help young adults make sense of their lives, even as we're trying to make sense of our own. We're working different part-time jobs. We're trying to figure out our sense of calling. And so I just start preaching right here every Saturday night to anybody who's going to come. And I remember the first night, there was like 20 to 30 people, and I'm like, I'm already making plans, like, we're going to need a bigger building. This place is going to be full. Week two, when worship started, and I was like leading worship, and then I'd take my guitar off and then come over here and preach. When worship started, there were two people here, and they sat on opposite sides of the sanctuary. But by the time we got to preaching, there was like five or six people here. Sam Meyer, who's leading worship here, she was there that week. She's an OG when it comes to our young adult ministry. Nonetheless, through that experience, it gave me a lot of hands-on time to try to figure out, what is young adulthood? What's it all about? What is this chapter of our lives? I'm in the midst of it. I'm reading about it. There's a lot of articles and books coming out at the time about it. And this is the thing. Like, if there's one theme, one thread that runs through that season of young adulthood, that age span from about 18 to 34, it's this, that young adulthood is a chapter marked by restless searching. Everybody say searching. That's going to be our key word for today. Young adulthood is a chapter marked by restless searching. like every other chapter we're going to talk about in this series, that there's both age parameters to these chapters, but there's also major themes that kind of set this. Every chapter is both an age and a stage. And as an age, young adulthood, as I've already said, is about 18 to 34. It's about, you know, from the moment you graduate high school or getting close to that through about your early 30s. And sometimes you kind of, it's a rough beginning and ending. But in that season, from a physiological perspective, your brain is going through some changes. So we're going to get into some neuroscience for just a minute here. Meg Jay, who works a lot with young adults, she wrote a book about a decade ago called The Defining Decade. And in that book, she's talking all about this season of your life, the young adult chapter. And she spends a large amount of time in that book explaining what neuroscientists have begun to discover about the brain, which is that in your early 20s, from about your late adolescence through about your mid-20s, your brain is going through a second major formation period that's similar, only similar to what toddlers go through. But now your toddler's in the real world without your parents. And now you're out there and your brain is going through this developmental, what she calls a developmental sweet spot. And this is the way that she explains it. She says, in this season of your life, the back of your brain, which she calls the lizard brain or the emotional brain, it's the brain, the part of your brain that's like, let's party, like I'm here for a good time. I don't need pros and cons lists. Like, we're just going to do it. I'm going to do whatever I'm feeling like. That part of your brain, 100% developed. It's all ready to go. The prefrontal cortex, which is the decision-making part of your brain, the executive center, the part that says, maybe we should slow down, maybe we should think this out, maybe we should talk to some people before we do this, that part is getting way overrun by the back of your brain. And so your brain, the front of it, the executive center, is still developing through about the age of 25 to 26. And so you're actually, though, she says, this is a developmental sweet spot because you're in a season of your life where you can make some changes that you're never again going to be able to make in the same way. You're able to make some decisions and take some risk that you need to make in that chapter of your life. So your brain is actually primed for this season. And so that's just from a neuroscience perspective. And so there's literally an age associated with young adulthood where your brain is going through some stuff and it doesn't last forever. But it's also a stage or a chapter marked by a key theme, and it's this theme. It's this theme of searching. As your brain is in this sweet spot of development, you're also in this season of searching where nothing feels firm and you're trying to figure out answers to a lot of questions. Now, I know this is going to be a very, very dated reference, but the best album by U2 is what album? If anyone want to tell me? The Joshua Tree album? Okay, nobody even knows. I should have done this. I should have just exited out next time. Okay. Bono, who's the lead singer of U2, Bono, for those of you who are not familiar, Bono is the lead singer of U2. He helped produce that album in his 20s. And the most famous song from that album he wrote in his 20s, and these are the lyrics of this song. And I've never found lyrics that more accurately capture this sense of restless searching. Listen to what he says. I'm not going to sing it. He says, I've climbed the highest mountains, I've run through the fields only to be with you, only to be with you. I've run, I've crawled, I've scaled these city walls only to be with you. And this is the key line, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for. He wrote that when he was in his 20s, and again, I've never found a lyric that I feel like more perfectly captures the experience of this chapter of somebody's life. He doesn't really tell us, as a classic, you know, songwriter doesn't, like, what he's searching for here, like, what he means by you, is it God, is it a woman, we don't know. Nonetheless, what he's talking about here is this feeling of searching for God knows what and unable to grasp it, and I'm just searching for something. And there's this urgency, there's this anxiety around trying to bring closure to this search. And it feels like the song, again, could only be written by somebody who's in the midst of this chapter. Ronald Rollheiser, who's long past this chapter, he's a Catholic priest and writer. He's written on different chapters of our lives. He describes what younger early adulthood feels like in his book, Sacred Fire. And he writes this about young adulthood, and some of you who are in this or have been through this are going to relate. He says, this is a time of much longing and searching. Searching for an identity, searching for acceptance, searching for a circle of friends, searching for intimacy, searching for someone to marry, searching for a vocation, searching for a career, searching for the right place to live, searching for financial security, and searching for something to give us substance and meaning, in a word, searching for home. And what I found is reading that, experiencing young adulthood, reading about young adulthood, just kind of boiling that down, what I've found is I've come to believe that every young adult is on five critical open-ended searches that they're looking to bring closure to. They're on five critical searches that they're looking to bring closure to. And these are the searches. I'm going to walk through them just real quickly. But answers, habits, belonging, love, and work. There's different ways that different people put that. Like sometimes with work, you might put purpose. There's a lot of different ways that you might put this, but answers, habits, belonging, love, and work. And it's not that once you get to age 35, suddenly you're like, yep, don't care about any of those things anymore. Have all that figured out for my life. That's not the point here, but that these searches are amplified in young adulthood because now you're out on your own for the first time. And instead of having default explanations for these things or a grounding for this, maybe it came from your family or school or whatever, you now have to figure these things out for yourself. And so it's amplified in young adulthood. And so for example, let's just walk through them. Answers. Some of you in the room are feeling this right now. You're uncertain about what you believe. That's why you walked in here this morning. You're like, I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to figure it out. You're doubting your childhood religion if you even had one. Or maybe you didn't grow up in church, and now you're doubting that. And you're doubting, and you're like, I'm going to try out church and see what that's all about. You're struggling to decide where you land. You have more questions than answers in this season. You feel a little bit overwhelmed by all the advice that's out there. And you don't really know who to believe. And you're trying to figure that out. Who do you trust? Or habits. Some of you are like, you know, you're at the beginning of young adulthood. You're like, I can be anybody. Like, I'm going to change my personality. I'm going to change who I am. I'm going to break these family patterns that I have in my life that from generation to generation, where I'm going to start a new pattern now. Or maybe you're having freedom for the first time in your life. And you're like, forget all those. I'm going to do whatever I want. And so, but without even realizing it, you're starting habits that are going to be harder and harder to break. And maybe you're feeling that you're at the end of your 20s now. After kind of living free from any good habits, bad habits, and you're feeling stuck, and you're like, how do I change this? Is it too late? Austin just said that thing about my brain. I'm 26. And I'm like, is it over? Like, is there a chance? And you're struggling to change into the person you want to be. Or belonging, right? This is one that, man, probably more than any of the other ones that I started to notice first, is that in your 20s, you know, you have these childhood friends. Ben Rector has this really good song about old friendships. But then you get into adulthood and, like, you know, you're going in different directions from your childhood and high school friends or even your college friends. Like, I always call college like a friendship microwave. It, like, just accelerates friendships at a level. And then you get out to the real world and it takes 20 years and you still don't have a friend. Like, you're like, you still feel like you're talking about the same stuff you were 20 years ago and you're struggling to figure out who are your people now? Where do I belong? And you're feeling this creeping loneliness of I'm not sure who to call. Or love, right? Bringing closure to this doesn't necessarily mean you get married. That's not God's vision for every single person. Singleness is also part of his vision for that as well. But maybe this is a search that you feel amplified in this season, that you long to be in a committed relationship, but you're just not sure if you're ready for it. Or maybe you love being single, but you're tired of feeling like a third wheel with all of your friends who are pairing off. Or you've been burned by some bad relationships in the past, and now you're carrying all this baggage, and you're like, I don't know if I want to put myself out there again. Or you're in a relationship right now, and you're wondering if someone better is out there. Don't nudge each other if you're with that person now. You're tired of swiping. You're wondering if God is calling you to the single life. Like, there's a lot of questions. And then finally, with work, right? You don't know what you want to be when you grow up, and now you're grown up, and you're like, oh boy. Like, it's not a fun question anymore. It's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like, oh no, I'm here. I have to do something. And you're struggling to find a job that's fulfilling, but also makes enough money to pay for rent and Wi-Fi and college debt, in our case, laundry at the time. You're wondering if what you're doing now is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. Like, did you just steal the deal? Is this a life sentence at this job? You're already feeling burned out. You haven't even started your career yet. And so this is a little bit of what that feels like, those five searches. Some of you are like, I feel very seen right now. Like, that's where I'm at. Maybe one of them you feel more than the other, but at some point in young adulthood, we feel these five searches. Every single time I talk about this, I know that there are some people who are beyond this chapter who are a little bit grumpy. They're like, that's not real. Young adulthood is made up. I went from like 18 to like working on a farm and 17 kids by like 23. And like, this isn't real. You know, like, this is all made up because everybody's soft or whatever. But the reality is young adulthood is old. We might have a new concept for it sociologically and psychologically, but it's an old concept in the sense that people have been on these searches for a long time. My prime example of that actually comes from here. This is a book called Confessions, written by St. Augustine of Hippo. This is a really weird picture of him I found. and there's a lot going on. We don't have time to explain it. This is not when he was in young adulthood. But he wrote this book, Confessions, at the end of the 4th century. He's a North African, and he wrote at the end of the 4th century about his experience in young adulthood. Whereas he was growing into his teens, what I found is I reread this book years ago, and I found each of these five searches in his young adulthood. He was searching for answers, habits, belonging, love, work, answers. He was like, he deconstructed his mom's Christianity. He's like, I don't want that anymore. And he wandered into different cults and philosophies, habits. He started to get a problem with lust, and he couldn't figure out how to break that in his life. At first, it was fun, and then it became really problematic. Belonging. He kept going in and out of these different friendships. In fact, he was in one cult because he felt a lot of belonging there, and then he struggled to believe it because he didn't want to be lonely, even though he didn't believe that stuff anymore. Or love. He got in a long-term relationship. Eventually, it led to a breakup that he carried a lot of baggage with that. And work, he just couldn't figure out what he wanted to do. He kept trying things until he basically had a nervous breakdown and trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his life. And the point of all of this is this. It's just to come back to that theme. Young adulthood is a season marked by restless searching. And particularly, these five major searches: answers, habits, belonging, love, and work. And so, if you're not careful, though, and this is where our ground text, or this text is going to come in for us today, and where everybody else is going to come in as well. If you're not careful, this season of searching, this chapter marked by searching, these five searches can become something that you complete on your own. That you just think, okay, it's just me trying to do this by myself. But that's not God's plan for you. He doesn't want you to go on these searches on your own. And that's where our text comes in today. And so if you have your text open, you can leave it there for a minute. We're going to keep building toward it with a little bit of background. We don't know much about Timothy. Everybody say Timothy. Timothy is this character in the Bible. He's in the New Testament. He shows up. And Timothy, what we do know about him is that he was most likely in this chapter that we just described. He's in this chapter of his life when we first meet him. And we first meet him in the book of Acts, which is a story. It's about 28 chapters in the Bible, all about the earliest churches, about the Christian movement as it spread from Jerusalem throughout the Roman Empire, got beyond the boundaries of Judaism to Gentiles as well. And so it's spreading. And in Acts, we get this relationship begin to form between a man named Paul and this younger man named Timothy. And it shows us through the rest of the New Testament how this relationship forms. And in it, I think we get some insight into what young adults need most in this chapter of their lives. And so let's track their relationship. We're going to go back to Acts 16 first. Listen to where they meet, Paul and Timothy. It says, Paul went on to Derbe and Lystra, where there was a disciple named Timothy. It's just a follower of Jesus, just a word for that. The son of a believing Jewish woman, but his father was a Greek. And the brothers and sisters at Lystra and Iconium spoke highly of him. Paul wanted Timothy to go with him, so he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, since they all knew that his father was a Greek. And so a couple things we learned about Timothy here is that he's a Greek, so he's not Jewish. His mom raised him in the Christian faith. We're not sure really if his dad was in the picture, honestly, at this point in his life. But then he meets Paul, who's starting churches across the Roman Empire and begins to become a father figure for Timothy. We're not specifically told that he's a young adult here, but in another text that we're going to get to in today's text, we learn that he's young or youthful, which usually means 20s or 30s. And Paul invites him in this text to leave his mom and dad and say, we're going to leave them and you're going to come with me and I'm going to come alongside me for the journey and apparently get a small surgery as part of that, which for reasons we don't have time to get into. So throughout the rest of Acts, Timothy goes all over the Roman Empire with Paul planting churches. They're talking together. They're going through different trials together. They're facing challenges. They're leading together. They're thinking about theology together, all this stuff. And at some point, Paul sends Timothy to the city called Ephesus, where the church is a mess. It's disorganized. There's heresy. He's like, I need you to go there and fix things up a little bit. And so he sends him there, but he maintains a relationship with him. And he writes some of these letters that we have in the Bible called 1 and 2 Timothy. It's just who it's written to. That's why it's called that. So it's these letters that Paul wrote to Timothy to provide some personal and professional guidance for him while he's in this place called Ephesus. And so the relationship is now continuing, not in person, but through these letters. And in the opening to 1 Timothy, listen to how Paul describes his relationship with Timothy. It says this, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the command of God our Savior and of Christ Jesus our hope, to Timothy, my true son. Everybody say, my true son. My true son in the faith, grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Christ Jesus our Lord. He calls him my true son in the faith. Paul is now stepping in here, and he's considering himself a parent or a father figure to Timothy in this season of his life. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17, he calls him my dearly loved and faithful child in the Lord. And he has a couple of these sons in his life, and he often says when he's writing to churches that you are lacking in fathers and as part of that, mothers in the faith. And I know that some of you have, you know, pain. But he also reminds him, look, I'm not really going to be your father. I'm going to mess up. Really, God the Father is really who we're looking to. But again, he gets to be a representative of that in his life. And so throughout this letter then that he writes, it's like a father writing to his son, providing guidance to him personally and professionally about how to navigate these different challenges he's facing. We get to kind of the crux of it in 1 Timothy chapter 4, 12 through 16, where he provides some more guidance for him in young adulthood. And listen to what he says. He says, don't let anyone despise your youth. Which is not to say he's in third grade, right? He's a young adult here. Don't let anyone despise your youth. And then he's giving him guidance. Set an example for believers in speech and conduct and love and faith and impurity. Until I come, give your attention to public reading, exhortation, teaching. Don't neglect the gift that's in you. And so he's like, look, man, I've seen all this potential in you. Let's make sure that we're bringing that out. Like, don't you know, snuff that out, but make sure you're really letting that shine. He's saying, look, we've had people lay hands on you through prophecy. Practice these things. Be committed to them so that your progress may be evident to all. Pay close attention to your life. He's saying, look, your character matters. Like, don't lose track of that. Pay close attention to your life and your teaching. Persevere in these things. He's like, it's going to be hard. I remember what it was like. For in doing so, you're going to save both yourself and your hearers. And so he's giving him this guidance, this older person who's further ahead in a different chapter to this other person in a younger chapter of their lives. And then in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 1 through 2, he says, this is actually what the church should feel like, is this kind of relationship. Paul talks about the relationship between people like Timothy following Jesus through young adulthood and those like Paul following Jesus through middle or late adulthood and what it can look like at its best. And he says this in 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2. He says, don't rebuke an older man, but exhort him as what? A father. He says, this is what your relationship should feel like. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters with all purity. And specifically here, he's writing, you know, what it looks like for Timothy to treat those who are in other chapters with respect and honor. But the other idea here is he's laying out what can happen and what's possible in the church, which is that other people can step in as fathers and mothers in the faith who are further along in different chapters of their lives and provide personal and professional guidance to those who are in a different chapter because they've been there and they've been through it. And this is what I want us to gather from here. As we see this relationship unfold, here's what I think is essential to understand. What young adults need most in this chapter of their lives is trusted guides. What young adults need most in this chapter of their lives is trusted guides who are not their peers and who are not their parents. They need trusted guides in this chapter of their life who are not their peers and not their parents. Just like Timothy had Paul, if you're in this chapter of following Jesus, you need people who can step in and provide guidance for you. And that's where all the rest of us who are in different chapters can be a part of this. If you've ever taken a literature course, or maybe you've tried purposely to forget everything you ever learned in that, one of the things that you'll often hear is this concept called the hero's journey. And in the hero's journey, it was originally described by this guy named Joseph Campbell as a basic storyline that you're going to find in almost every great famous story and myth. Even modern-day films have this hero's journey in the background of it. And Donald Miller is another writer who summarized this concept in a very helpful way. And this is how he explains the hero's journey. He says, there's a character who has a problem, who meets a guide, who gives them a plan that calls them to action, that ends in success, and that helps them avoid failure. I'm going to walk through that again. You have a character, has a problem, meets a guide, gives them a plan, calls them to action, that ends in success, helps them avoid failure. The key here for us is that the character, in this case, young adults who have a problem or they're in the middle of trying to bring closure to some searches, what do they meet? A guide who gives them a plan. So my question for you, let's do a little bit of just work here. In Lord of the Rings, who is the guide for Frodo? This is where you get to talk back to me. All right, who is the guide for Frodo in Lord of the Rings? Somebody want to... Gandalf, yes, you are correct. What about in the original Star Wars trilogy? Who is the guide for Luke Skywalker? Obi-Wan Kenobi or Yoda, depending on where we're at in the films. Obi-Wan goes away pretty quick. For Katniss Everdeen in The Hunger Games, my younger folks, say it loud. I heard it kind of. Hey, Mitch. Yeah, I heard it. That's the guide, right? These are people. Who are these guides? They're the people who have been there, been where they're going, and can provide guidance for the way and provide them with a plan of action that can end in success and avoid failures. People who have been through it. And so the question for us is, who is the guide for people who are in the middle of in the chapter of young adulthood in their lives? It's all of you. It's the rest of you who have been through that chapter and now know the lay of the land, know the pitfalls and the good opportunities from experience, from failure and success, and can now guide somebody else who hopefully is willing to listen to you through it. They're going to make some mistakes too, but you can guide them through it. And the key is that those primary guides can't just be their peers and it can't just be their parents. First of all, your peers. Young adults, you need other people in young adulthood, right? Otherwise, it's a very lonely experience. You need other people who are in it, who are struggling with you, going through the same stuff. But what I always say to young adults, I felt this myself, if you only hang out with other young adults, you get weird and you get dumb. And so, because young adults as a group are dumb, and we're still learning how to navigate the world. We have a lot to learn. But if you're only getting wisdom and advice from other young adults, we have to find ways to get beyond that and to find other people who are past that chapter of our lives who can actually help us get move forward. The other thing I want to say is it can't just be your parents. Some of you are like, thank God. I'm going to send this to my mom immediately after this. Like, please don't do that. That's not the point. But I'm going to just speak to parents. There are some of you who maybe are parents of young adults or have been parents of young adults, and you know this and you've experienced this, where you do the best that you can to raise them in the way they should go. And then you have to, and you can still be available to provide guidance as needed. You might have to say, hey, why don't you try working through that yourself a little bit first? And you can't parent them in the same way anymore. It's just like the relationship changes a little bit as they get older. And that's actually part of how we're designed and wired. And I think, though, that provides a significant challenge to parents of young adults. One of my favorite stories that my dad loves to tell is when my sister joined the Air Force. She was based out of Washington, D.C., and there was a hurricane that was approaching. It was close to a decade ago. My dad was worried, as a dad does, about my sister, Natalie. And so my dad does what any dad would do. He calls the Air Force, and he said, could you check on her? And they say, yeah, we're going to check on her. And then word gets back to my dad that they did, in fact, check on her through my sister. And this is what they said to my sister when they found her. They said, hey, your daddy called. And you tell your daddy that the Air Force owns you now. that was the text my dad got back from my sister. But I think that's, again, that speaks to the frustration that a lot of adults, of young adults, feel. That moment of like, oh, our relationship is different now. I don't get to parent them in the same way that I did. Sociologically, the word for that is differentiation. You're becoming separate from your parents. You're becoming an individual apart from your family. Remember, I was sitting down with a parent of a young adult once who was just talking through some of the struggles of parenting a young adult in this season of their lives. And the way I explained differentiation was this, that's the kind of I've always used since, was when you're growing up, you're learning, and when you're a parent of your kids, you're teaching them what does it mean to be their last name. And so I spent 18 years finding out what does it mean to be a gone. I learned from my family the good and the bad of what it means to be a gone. But when you hit 18 or 19, and you move out or you go on from there, that's when you begin to figure out what does it mean to be your first name. Who are you apart from everybody else in your family? Who are you and what are you going to contribute in the world? And that's what differentiation is all about. And this is what Gordon Smith, who's a helpful guide for me through these different chapters, writes in his book, Courage and Calling, which I love. And he talks about it this way. He says, most often, probably, parents long for their children to become adults, but feel unsure how they can enable their sons and daughters to make this transition. The bottom line is a critical need for a clean break from parents. Some of you are like moving away from your parents, like literally physically right now as you're hearing that. And we do not become individuals, we do not become adults unless in a significant and discernible way we leave father and mother. It doesn't mean that you don't come home for Thanksgiving. It doesn't mean that you still don't talk to your parents. It doesn't mean that they're not available to you. It doesn't mean they don't provide you guidance. But Gordon Smith goes on to say in another book that what you need most in that season is other voices that come alongside us as an alternative voice to our parents. Some of you parents have experienced this before. Like, you've told your kids something 1,000 times, and then some other mentor comes into their life, says the same thing. They say it back to you. They're like, I've been telling you that for years. Like, no, but you want to say that, but they needed to hear it from an alternative voice. And this is the season in their lives where they need an alternate voice. And so what Timothy and other young adults need is they need older adults who are further along, who aren't their parents and peers, to come alongside them as trusted guides. And my best advice for finding those guides is not to come up with a mentoring program at BCC, but to put yourself in environments like this one where relationships and people in other chapters can happen organically, like on a Sunday morning, or even better, in an everyday group or on a team. rather than simply being around other young adults, you got to find ways to be in context for relationships with people across chapters can form. And so maybe you're in this room, though, and I just want to speak to the adults, or the adults, the parents of young adults in this room. If you're a parent of a young adult in this room, and maybe you're feeling stressed about this, you're like, well, what can I do? Like, if I can't just tell them what to do all the time, if they're not listening, what can I actually do? I'm going to tell you what you can do. It's the most powerful thing you can do. It might not sound like it, but you can pray for them. You can get on your knees every single day for the entirety of their young adulthood and begin to pray for them. And the reason I say that is because that's exactly what Augustine's mom did. I was talking about Augustine, that really weird picture from earlier. His mom was named Monica. In fact, if you ever meet anybody named Monica, the reason the name's popular is because of this Monica. And this Monica, at first, tried to follow Augustine all over the Roman Empire, tried to like get him back into church, and was like, Mom, leave me alone. She like went and found the priest at some town. She's like, hey, get him out of this cult, like get him into church. And he's like, look, I can't do that. But he says, if you keep praying like you are, God is going to do something in his life. And so Monica just started praying. And at the end of Augustine's Confessions, it's really a eulogy to his mom, where he begins to talk about the way that she prayed for him through young adulthood, pleaded with him, tears soaking the floor is the way he described it, that he would come to Jesus. When you can't talk to them directly, you can talk to God about them and let God begin to work providentially in their lives. If you want to read more about that, I did write an article once, just throw it up there real quick, for the Gospel Coalition. It was like a weird one to write for Mother's Day, but this is the one that I wrote about why you can't do anything for your kids. But you can go read that online. There's more on that for those who are out there. But in a chapter of life marked by restless searching, and particularly these five critical searches, what young adults need most is trusted guides, not their parents, not their peers, who come alongside them and show them the way forward. And so with that in mind, as somebody who's now finishing up young adulthood and beginning into middle adulthood, I just want to leave you with some practical guidance today. I don't want to just say, go find a mentor, best of luck. I want to give you some practical guidance in the hope that you can connect with someone at some point who can provide this more personally. And so if I had time, I would give you one thing you could do for each of those five searches. And I have, but I'm just going to give you for the first three, answers, habits, and belonging. I want to give you one best next step you can take in this next season, in particular something that we do as a church that will help you with these. And so the first one is that if you're finding really the search for answers is heavy on your heart right now, what I recommend is that you try Alpha. Alpha is something that's coming up really soon, but if you're exploring faith and you're trying to figure out what you believe, I know that's plenty of people in this room. Regardless of what your parents did or didn't believe, as I know, again, some of you are exploring that, I encourage you to try this. It's 9 weeks, there's dinner. Just come for that if you need to. Just come to launch night if you need to and just see what it's like. And it's built around big questions of faith, and we run it 2 times a year. It's for people from every chapter, but I just want to say, if this is where you're at, you should come to this. And what I want to say is this, is you might be thinking, man, 9 weeks sounds like a long time. First of all, I'm like, just come to the first one and see what you think. But here's what I would say. 9 weeks is not a long time when you consider the implications for the rest of your life. Faith is one of the things, whether it's Christianity or lack thereof, whatever it is, it's going to impact everything in your life, whether you want it to or not. Take 9 weeks to think deeply about it. You'll be glad that you did, no matter where you land. And so if you want to think about that, start September 20th. You can go to alphapgh.org to register. We're going to be really opening that up next week, but you can register early now for that. Second thing, maybe you're feeling habits right now. You're really searching to become a different kind of person. You're trying to figure out who you want to be. What we built actually for you is something called the Everyday Habits Course. Again, it's for people in every chapter of their lives. But if you can establish these core habits we talk about in your 20s, it's going to change the trajectory of your life. In fact, we built this course after looking at what are the habits that we continue to see in the lives of people who are closing the gap between the life they're living and the life we're made for. Let's reverse engineer that and say, what are the habits they started? And these are the habits that we found. And so you can take, we're going to offer that again in January and February, right at the beginning of the year. But what I recommend is you can even go online at everydayinstitute.com or even just do it with a few friends in a home or something like that. And the last thing is if you're searching for belonging, something to try that's coming up in about a month is an everyday group. An everyday group. So every fall and spring, we invite people to join an everyday group, which are groups that meet once a week in homes or the church for about 8 to 10 weeks, depending on the group. And we're going to be opening those up in just a few weeks, and we'd love, even if you want to start one and you're interested in what it would take to do that, we would love to talk to you about that. And they continue to be one of the best places for people to make friends. And when we find out that people have made friends in our church, usually it's through a team that they were on, a group that they were in, or some kind of event that they attended with other people. It rarely happens on Sunday morning. This is a great place to start, but that's the place to truly find some belonging. And for love and work, those other five searches, I wrote a whole book on young adulthood called A Restless Age that you can check out. It's just a way to go deeper into any of those, or I have tons of book and podcast recommendations for more on that. And so with that, let me just kind of give a summary here. Young adulthood is a chapter marked by restless searching. And what we need most in this season is trusted guides who give us practical wisdom as we navigate these searches. And I've given you steps that you can take forward. It's not every step, it's just a step that will lead to the next steps. And here's why this matters, and I'm pleading with you on this one, is that the decisions you make in the first chapter of your life will disproportionately impact the other two chapters. There are people in this room who are saying, I wish somebody would have told me what I'm hearing today when I was 22 years old. And some of you in here are 22 years old, or you're 25, or you're in your early 30s. You're hearing something today that can disproportionately impact the rest of your life. Meg Jay says it this way. She says, with 80% of life's most significant events taking place by age 35, as 30-somethings and beyond, we largely continue with or correct for the moves we made during our 20-something years. Some of you know that from experience. You know the moves you made in your 20-something years, and you're saying, man, I wish I could go back in time and do them differently. Some of you, though, that's still ahead of you, and you have an opportunity to make some moves and to make some decisions as you're navigating those searches in this season of your life. And I want this church to be a place where we come alongside young adults as guides and help you make those decisions as you move toward the life you're made for. I know some of you just read that quote, you just freaked out a little bit. You're like, oh no, like I was already anxious and now I'm like 34. Like, you know, I'm feeling this, like I'm super anxious about all of this. And before you freak out, the last thing I want to mention is the invitation of Jesus in this chapter. In each chapter of our lives, there's an invitation from Jesus, and different invitations from Jesus are going to take on a different flavor or a different emphasis in certain seasons, but this is the one that I've continued to find speaks to people in young adulthood. It's this one from Matthew chapter 11, 28 through 30. And this might be all you need to hear today is Jesus says this, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, I'm going to give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me, because I'm lowly and humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy. My burden is light. Some of you are thinking, if I can just get through each of these five searches, then I'll be at rest. If I can just get to age 35, then I'll be at rest. But Jesus is saying, come to me, no matter how old you are, no matter where you are in the searches, no matter whether you've gotten it right or gotten it wrong, come to me, and I want to give you rest in this season. And that's what God is dying to give to us. Yes, you got to navigate those five searches. Yes, you got to find trusted guides. But where it starts is coming to Jesus, the one who's not just a guide. He's the one who, as a young adult, at age 33, right when he would have been going on to the next stage of his life, actually laid down his life so young adults like us could experience through faith in him the life that we're made for. Through trusting in his death and resurrection, you can actually respond to this invitation and come to him, and you're going to have more than a guide. You're going to have a guide, but you're going to have more than that. You're going to have a God who has now laid down his life for you. And now wants to walk alongside you into the life that you're made for. Returning back to Augustine's story, this is what happened to him. He had some help from different guides along the way, and he was searching through all these different searches of young adulthood. He had this mental breakdown, and at some point, though, he heard this invitation of Jesus in his own way, and he responded by giving his life. And when, at the beginning of his confessions, on the very first page, he writes this as a summary of his experience. He says this about his whole, that chapter of his life. He says, our heart is restless until it rests in you. He was restlessly searching in all the wrong places until he came to Jesus and found the rest he needed. In a minute, we're going to have a moment of prayer and just praying over some young adults in the room. And I want you to think that maybe this is a good morning for you to receive some prayer if you're in this season of your life. But the first thing I want to do is actually take part in communion. You might have grabbed communion when you came in. If you didn't get a chance to grab it, there's some baskets in the back or up front. Don't worry about being disruptive. We're not worried about that. Just make sure you get some communion. And one of the ways, though, that we respond to this invitation of Jesus is this juice and this bread, which represents his body broken for us and his blood poured out for us. We remember that Jesus, the young adult, gave his life so that we could experience the life we're made for, that he's the one that we've actually been searching for. He's the one that song was actually about. So I'm going to give you just a second now, just to remember what Jesus has done for you. And so just if you haven't yet, just take a minute, take some communion, and then in a moment I'll have us all stand. So at this point, I want to say this. Someone said to me once that I've just never forgotten. Is that the sermon might be over, but that doesn't mean God's done speaking in this room. Like, God still has things he wants to say. So I want everyone to stand at this time. Everybody just stand up for just as we're going to get ready to head back into worship. And I want to invite anybody whose age is 18 to 34, we'll take 17-year-olds too, 18 to 34, if you're in that age span and you want to receive prayer this morning, in just a moment, I wanted to invite you up to come forward and just put your hands like this. You can just stand right down here at this area, just put hands like this in just a moment. And what I want you to think about is maybe one of these five things that you're feeling most right now that you would love to receive prayer and a word from God for. Because in a minute after that, then I'll invite some other people to come forward and pray for you. And if you come forward to pray for somebody, I don't have anybody picked out. So just if you see somebody in need of prayer, come forward and say, ask them, which of those five searches do you really want prayer for right now? They don't need to explain it. Just give them the word and then pray for them. And then what I want you to do is I want you to invite the Holy Spirit and just wait in silence for a minute. And see if the Lord lays something on your heart that might be a word for them. And take a risk. What I would recommend not doing is if they say love, don't say, I know the perfect girl for you. Like, let's not do those kind of words from the Lord today. Or like work, like you're about to come into a huge six-figure paycheck. Like let's not do that. Let's just begin to share what we feel like the Lord might be putting on our hearts for that person who's in the middle of that search and needs a word from the Holy Spirit, who Jesus says is our comforter and our guide. There might be a word for you this morning. And so if you want a word this morning, and if you feel like one of these searches is heavy on your heart right now, and you want to receive some prayer, I want to invite you forward. And just as we were praying for you this morning, we felt like there was somebody in this room in need of courage that needs to come forward. Somebody who wants to know that they're seen and loved by God. Somebody who feels like they're headed into a new season or horizon and they need to know God's with them. Or somebody who's just really looking for belonging or any of these five searches. If that described you or you're like, none of it is, but I want prayer, just come forward right now. And somebody's got to start between the ages of 18 and 34. Come stand up here and we want to pray for you. And just put your hands out like this. And so take just a minute to do that and then we'll invite some people forward. We'll give just a minute if you're thinking it. Don't feel like you missed your chance if like 10 minutes from now you're like, I need it too. Like, it's okay. We're here for you. All right, now what I want to do at this time, we're going to head back into worship in a minute, is if you see somebody up here, I want you to come up and pray for them. I want you to just put a hand on their shoulder if that's okay, and then just pray for them and ask them which of these searches they're feeling most right now. And just try to pray directly over that. And then take a minute, sometime while you're praying, to just invite the Holy Spirit, just to wait on the Spirit. So why don't we do that now? If you're in a different chapter of your life and you want to come pray for one of these people, we'd love for you to do that. We'd love for you to do that. And then in a minute, they'll lead us back into worship. And I'm going to start by praying now. Come, Holy Spirit. We pray now that you would be with us as we're now praying over these young adults, that you would speak a powerful word to them as we head into worship, Jesus. That you would lead them to trusted guides who can come alongside them for the journey. It's in your name that we pray and we open up. Amen. All right, why don't you guys come forward? Somebody come and pray for each of these.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast for a new teaching from us every single week.